Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. Joining you in the studio tonight is Ian and Chris. Of course, you can bring up whatever is on your mind. You can join us online as well. Just head over to freetalklive.com and enjoy the various features that we have for you there. Coming up, looks like Donald Trump has adopted the new hot Republican line of advocating for an escalation in the war on drugs, specifically attacking drug cartels in Mexico with the actual U.S. military. We can talk about that coming up here. But Chris, you have an update on a story we covered, I think, sometime late last year, where there was some talk about, and I thought it had already occurred. I thought there was already a bill that passed about this, but what you're going to tell us here is the bill just passed, and it's in regards to the new mandate that they're going to be shoving down everybody's throat come, I believe, 2026, if I recall correctly, where every new car that is sold has to have a breathalyzer active in it, and I believe it has to be active for everybody who drives it all the time. Am I right about that?
That's right.
Yeah. Where's the story coming from?
So this is the story. Okay, so unfortunately, there's no, like, updated article. It seems to have gotten swept under the rug, but it did pass as part of the infrastructure bill. They basically hid the in-car breathalyzer bill in that. And
well, it's not like they had to hide the things. I understand it. The politicians were all about this particular bill. Because who could be in favor of drunk driving? Right. If you're not in favor of this bill, kind of like the Patriot Act, right? Oh, you don't want to be unpatriotic, so you have to sign and agree to all this big government.
I mean, you might be when you're when you happen to have a, I don't know, a poppy seed and your breathalyzer, your car won't let you start the car because of the breathalyzer test.
I don't think the poppy seeds are going to trigger it. It's looking for alcohol.
I don't know,
right?
If it's poppy seeds, but I know there's certain things you can have in the morning that can cause these systems to fail.
Could be some mouthwash. That's got alcohol.
Probably the one I'm thinking.
Poppy seeds are going to trick a heroin test.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the wrong item there, but definitely, there's going to be a lot of people who have cars in the near future that won't start because, you know, alcohol in the breath.
Well, and also purportedly they would not only not start, but they, I believe, are supposed to shut down in the instance that they detect that you are drinking in the car.
You know what's interesting about the story is people who have, I'm one of those people, I've never had a breathalyzer, right?
Me neither, actually, come to think of it.
So, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't know all the different issues that they have, but I know they're very problematic for those who have had them, even when they're not drinking and driving, right?
Well, I'll take it back. I've had a private breathalyzer. There was an ex-girlfriend of mine. There was you could order them online, and so she had purchased her own breathalyzer. So I've tested a breathalyzer, but not in the circumstance of, like, having a police-administered breathalyzer. I've not had that happen.
Sure.
And, of course, you know, the cheaper they are, the less accurate that they tend to be. They also apparently expire over time. There's some sort of a, again, I'm not very familiar with it, probably maybe a little more familiar with it than you, but not that much. You have to keep, like, I don't know if it's like a cartridge or something. There's something that goes in there, if it's a chemical or what it is, but it expires. And so you have to, like, keep it up to date. You have to get fresh ones or whatever. And
they're expensive, too.
You can get a cheapy breathalyzer, and that's the thing. Like, you get what you pay for.
Yeah, of course. If you get a cheapy breathalyzer and the car doesn't start, I mean...
Well, and I'm sure this will be a very expensive breathalyzer because it's going to, you know, it's going to be some good old boy, somebody with political connections who's going to get the mandate to install these things. And well, anyway, if you
the reason why the police take you back to the station and do a proper breathalyzer, like they've got an actual desk unit at the station,
it's chemical breathalyzers,
because that one has been calibrated, or it's at least supposed to be calibrated regularly, and it's generally considered more reliable, although there's been a lawsuit about those, and I don't know what the status of that lawsuit was.
I know there's police departments who are not maintaining their chemical breathalyzers, and that's the reason for that lawsuit that you're referencing.
I think it wasn't that they weren't maintaining it. I think that the whole thing was like called into question, and I'm sorry I don't remember the details on that. But
maybe that's a different story.
Yeah, but anyway, that's the idea, is like the ones that are for the side of the road are just to give you an initial result, and then you take them back to the big breathalyzer at the station. So now they're going to be doing mandatory breathalyzers in cars. What else do we need to know about it?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's basically, it was hidden in a 2,702-page bipartisan infrastructure plan.
I'm sure all of those representatives read all 2,000 pages.
Oh, I'm sure they did, right?
Just like all the people who are now going to be subject to this 2,000-page piece of legislation, every single one of the American people is going to sit down and read this 2,000-page legislation, right?
Yeah, right.
The question actually should be, how many Americans have actually read this 2,000-page legislation? And it wouldn't surprise me if not even the people who wrote the legislation have read the entire thing, because likely sections of it were written by different lawyers and different law clerks or whatever, and it's all been cobbled together, and then they just passed the thing.
Yep.
I mean, so has one single person in the entire 330 million United States people, has one of them read all 2,000 pages of this?
You know, and the interesting thing is, a lot of times these bills, they get pushed forward and made public only just before the vote. So nobody could even read them, even if they wanted to. And you get politicians saying, well, you have to pass it in order to be able to read it, or something to that effect. Some really absurd statements. But this is the kind of stuff that's actually coming out of politicians' mouths.
It's amazing. I would put money on that there's not a single person who's read this bill.
In full,
I wager on that one.
I know
sure.
Some of the techniques they use in order to, how do I say this? I want to kind of use the word analyze, but that's probably not quite the right word, but basically figure out what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically there's like different tools for people to look through these bills and figure out what's in it without actually reading them, to some degree, right?
Sure.
And that this is literally how, like, lawyers and things look through these bills often, because they couldn't read the whole bill.
Sure. I mean, even if you could read the whole bill, again, it's written in legalese. So, I mean, I understand lawyers are better at reading legalese, but it still is a time-consuming activity. Like, if you know what legalese means, you're ahead of the game. But you still, when you're reading a law or a proposed change to the law, it'll say things like, oh, well, this modifies section XYZ of 123, and then you got to go look up XYZ 123 just to see what the old thing says and see how this fits into it. I mean, it's not just that you can sit there and read through the 2,000 pages and then say you're done.
Yeah.
You have to understand what they're trying to do.
The entertaining part of it, too, is you can have the exact same bill passed in all 50 states even, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, that bill is going to mean different things in different states because of something called case law.
Mm.
So they basically will have interpretations in your state by, you know, as the, you know, cases come up pertaining to that law, they will be interpreted differently. So something that, you know, a word that means one thing in one state might mean something entirely different in another state, even though it's the same exact law.
Mm-hmm. What else?
This could take the form of these monitoring. We don't know exactly what's going to come because it could take the form of passive monitoring. But one of the things that could happen with that is if it takes the form of passive monitoring, it could end up getting set off by passengers as opposed to drivers.
Yeah, that was one of the concerns. I mean, I remember when we were first talking about it, they were discussing the potential detection methods. And the classic method, of course, is there's like a tube that you have to blow into before it will allow you to start the car. That's the, I believe, the traditional, probably still being used to this day, system. This would bypass that. This would say, no, we're not going to use that technology. We want to use something newer and more expensive, probably. So they were talking about, like, I think one of them was some kind of UV detection that came off the steering wheel or something, so it could somehow detect the blood alcohol content through your fingers or through the palm of your hand as you're gripping the steering wheel, something crazy sounding like that. And then, of course, there was another one where there would be some kind of a sniffer that would be sniffing the air content in the car, but that would be obviously potentially set off by a passenger in that particular case.
I know one, there was a patent actually recently filed, like super recently, like in the past couple of months, also, you know, in relation to this, so it's somebody is looking to make some money off it. Is clearly what's I think what's going on here.
Obviously, that's going to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, this stuff wouldn't end up in a bill probably if it wasn't somebody making money on it. Yeah, so there's all sorts of stuff that's happening. So let's see here. What else we have? So the safety provisions of the framework don't stop at in-car breathalyzers. On top of anti-impaired driver tech, the spending plan also requires rear guards for semi-trucks to protect passenger vehicles who may rear-end them in the car. Don't ask me. An in-car reminder every time the engine stops for drivers to check their brake seats, lest they forget their kids in a hot car. And a study about whether federal crash test dummies accurately measure the impacts on women, the old, and the young. Yeah, so it's got like all...
Hold on. Read that list one more time.
Okay.
Let's take it one at a time.
On the top of the anti-impaired driver tech, this spending plan also requires rear guards for semi-trucks to protect passenger...
Whoa, is there a comma there? Rear guards for semi-trucks, comma, and then we're getting to another thing?
No.
Or is it rear trucks for semi-trucks to protect passengers?
No comma.
Okay, keep going with that then.
To protect passenger vehicles who may rear-end them.
Okay, how is that going to do anything?
I don't know. An in-car...
Rear guards for the trucks. Sorry, I was thinking of it in the reverse. So, for passenger vehicles... So they want to add a bumper or something like that
to the
back of semi-trucks.
Sounds like it.
Okay.
An in-car reminder every time the engine stops for drivers to check their brake seats.
Is there a comma there?
I'm sorry.
Every time the engine stops, comma?
An in-car reminder every time the engine stops. There's no comma here. For drivers to check their back seats. Least they forget their kids in a hot car.
I did read that wrong slightly, but yeah. Okay.
So,
wow.
So, yeah, you need to be reminded that you have kids, apparently. And if you don't have kids...
You're going to get reminded anyway.
I guess.
Don't forget the kids.
Wow. The funny thing about this is the sort of thing that just you end up learning to ignore.
The beeps and the lights and things like that.
It's one thing if it's used sparingly, but when it's used constantly, you ignore it. And I think the best example of this is actually, I think it was Windows. One version of Windows, they started popping up warning messages all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got to a point where nobody ever read the security warning messages. So what good were the security warning messages?
Just dismiss.
It was just automatic. And I didn't really run into that too much myself because I don't use Windows. But it's this logic, it's this faulty logic that, if we just warn people about stuff.
Listen, Chris, if it just saves one life.
But it doesn't. It actually makes you less safe. It kind of reminds me of actually, this goes to traffic, not computers at this point. But there's signs all over the place. Well, there's some intersections that are particularly have a lot of signage.
Oversigned.
Yeah. And what they found was removing signs actually reduced the number of car accidents.
Yes, I believe that was Denmark.
I think you might be right.
Yeah, they found that. Not only did it reduce car accidents, but also it increased driver safety. So,
yeah.
I guess sort of an obvious example would be if you're driving around a cliff and there's not a bunch of like guardrails or whatever that are on the edge of the cliff, are you going to be more cautious about how you drive around that cliff? You're damn right you are. You're not, you know you can't rely on that piece of metal between you and going off the cliff, so you drive a lot more careful in that case.
Yeah.
And that was a study that was done years ago. We've been talking about that for a long time. And I suspect it's been reproduced. I mean, I would hope that it's been reproduced.
I mean, it's not really surprising. And I don't know that we've reproduced that. I don't know if that study has been reproduced like specifically, but I think you can certainly look at other examples of if you put something in people's faces too much, it actually has the opposite effect.
Well, and you can see video from some countries where they show like an intersection in, I don't know, India or something like that, where they don't have the kind of budget for road safety technology that they do in the United States or in Europe or whatever. And it looks like pure anarchy with just people just turning whenever they can turn and people going in whatever direction they can get away with going. And it seems like it works out. You know, it looks weird to those of us who are used to obeying the traffic lights and things like that. But it's just humans making decisions about what to do. And obviously there's going to be accidents in that circumstance, but there's obviously accidents today regardless of all of the traffic control devices that they put into place. So I think that having more ability to make decisions on the road is a better thing.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you're never going to get, you know, you're never going to get safety 100%.
No, of course not. Not when you're dealing with a 2,000-pound hurtling piece of metal.
But the problem is that you really shouldn't aim for perfection, because the more perfection you try to gain, often you just increase the dangers, or you increase the costs to a point where you actually end up causing harm as a result. Like, you know, for example, maybe there's more people, you know, walking to work or something like that, as opposed to driving, because, you know, and walking to work in dangerous circumstances, like on the side of a highway or something like that, because they can't afford cars. They can't afford
people,
the vehicles.
Right. They're getting crazy expensive. They've had all these mandates for so long. There's the EPA and the California mandates that they have to put in all these this equipment under the hood that doesn't have to be there for, quote-unquote, environmental reasons.
Yep.
And that's been going on for decades. And now add to that all these mandates about, you know, having a breathalyzer in cab and mandatory warnings that you might have a kid in the back of the car. I mean, I just can't even. Now I'm wondering what that's going to be like. I mean,
I can imagine, you know, all these. You know, it's interesting because there's already, I find, vehicles. I'm sure I'm not the only one, but the beeps in vehicles to be distracting and to not know what they mean in the first place, right? Like, so now you're going to add more beeping vehicle.
What's that?
Right. Like, and now I'm looking like, is that my phone?
Instead of looking at the GPS road, right?
Yeah. Right. Instead of looking at the road, is that my kids in the backseat that I don't have? I mean,
it's so stupid. I mean, I think you were the one who said that you actually prefer cars pre a certain year because there's certain tech that was mandated, like black boxes or whatever, after a certain year.
Yeah, I mean, I think pre-1996 is the optimal, but unfortunately that's, I mean, there's not that many, you know, pre-1996 vehicles on the road, and the ones that are, you know, not. So I don't have a pre-1996 vehicle, but basically they instituted a law, I think, I'm pretty sure it was 1996 or right around there, that basically mandated black boxes in all vehicles built after that year, right around that time frame. So that's one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of, you know, more modern vehicles, but it's even worse with even newer vehicles. Now they've got like GPS devices that record, you know, your location in them, and, you know, all sorts of other
literal computer systems that are constantly transmitting data, perhaps, or whatever. And being able to shut down your car remotely, which is, again, what they're likely going to do with this breathalyzer mandate, because they know, you know, drunks are sneaky, right? Like, they know, okay, I'm blowing the tube to start the car, and then they can start drinking, right? But that's why, you know, they're going to keep checking you as you're driving. And if it detects alcohol, it's going to probably take over control of the car, pull the car to the side of the road, and then call the police.
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of sad, but oftentimes people will take their kids with them when they're drunk.
And have them blow
right,
on
so that the kid can blow into them. But the other thing that's also one of the other dangers of these breath tests are breathalyzers, is that because people have to actually like use them while they're driving and they're really challenging to use, it actually creates another hazard there. So it's, you know, and this is where people are not drunk, right?
Yeah.
So if you're randomly forced to use that breathalyzer, as I understand that that's how things work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's and as you pointed out, it's the objective of that is to stop somebody who's not drunk from using the breathalyzer and then allowing you to drive off drunk. But that doesn't really stop somebody from driving drunk if they take their kid with them, right?
Right.
And they just have the kid blow into them while
they're
driving.
Why they're going to come up with something that is less, or more difficult to fool. They're going to have a new system. There's going to be some new tech, that's going to be mandated. And that's why this has been passed. They're going to get rid of the tube thing and they're going to put something fancy and more expensive in its place. And it's going to be massive applause. You know, it's going to be a lot of people are going to be cheering this on. They're going to say, yeah, we got to do everything that it takes we got to do everything it takes to stop drunk drivers, including inconveniencing everyone who isn't a drinker. Everyone who's a responsible drinker, number one, is going to be inconvenienced by this. And everyone who never drinks is going to have this. This is going to be a mandatory thing in everyone's car, meaning everyone has to pay for this, meaning everyone's price of a car is going to go up as though they weren't already expensive enough. It's going to be terrible.
Yeah, definitely.
And apparently it's 2026 is when this is perhaps as soon as it's going to roll out.
I think
they still have to make decisions.
I think there may be more support now for it, but I think once the tech gets rolled out, I think you're going to see
some pushback
because I mean, if it's going to be as if it's anything like what we've seen thus far, the tech is bad, really bad. And I can't imagine there not being a ton of pushback once this starts rolling out to vehicles. Mandatory, for all vehicles.
It won't be mandatory for older vehicles, at least not that I'm aware of. The proposal is it will be all new vehicles. So, of course, a drunk who knows about this is not going to buy a new vehicle, right? Like, they're going to keep to the old cars.
And that's also kind of an interesting point you make, because it's probably going to increase the value of the older vehicles.
At least to the drunks. Or to those who don't want to be hassled by whatever all this nonsense
is. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Anything else?
No, not really. I think that's pretty much summarized.
We'll keep our eyes on this as it continues to develop, because it'll probably get worse between now and whenever this mandate comes into place. Of course, if you want to comment, you're welcome to join the show. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. All kinds of do-gooder mandates, I guess, we're talking about here. And speaking of drinking and drugging, there's a new proposal that's coming from Donald Trump that's going to sound similar to some of the things we've discussed before, the insane attack on Mexico. We'll talk about it coming up.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. danpilla.com.
USA News Update. President Biden addressing the American people at this hour on the recently passed debt ceiling bill. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says
he just wanted to make sure that the American people understood how important it was to get this done, how important it was to do this in a bipartisan way.
Biden will sign the bill this weekend. Former President Trump asserts that he deserves complete exoneration following the Justice Department's announcement that former Vice President Pence will not be prosecuted for possessing classified documents at his residence. Trump, speaking on Truth Social, claimed that he is equally innocent compared to Pence. CIA Director Bill Burns made a secret trip to China last month for a meeting with Beijing officials. That's according to a recent report. President Biden had dispatched Burns to emphasize the United States' interest in maintaining open intelligence communication channels with China. John Schaefer, USA News.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now, and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822, or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. You can join us here. The number is 603-283-6160. Bring up anything you want to discuss, 603-283-6160, Free Talk Live, brought to you this hour by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending, and I was really excited to see the folks over at Dash Incubator made an announcement today that Defy the Grid, which is apparently the top sales site for the Goldback product, which we're big fans of here on Free Talk Live. Goldback, of course, is the 1/1000th of an ounce. That's the smallest denomination piece of gold that you can actually put in your wallet and you can spend. It's amazing. It's beautiful. You've got to see. If you've never seen the Goldback, you got to check them out. Defy the Grid is one of, you know, dozens of websites online that offer the Goldback for sale. And Dash Incubator announced today that Defy the Grid is now accepting Dash for Goldbacks and other gold and silver products. So I think that's great news. For me, like, it's a perfect combination to have Goldbacks on one hand that you can have physically with you anywhere you go, which I do, and then also have Dash as a actually useful cryptocurrency. Low fees. You want to talk about low fees? Bitcoin fees are like $2 a piece, I think, median price last time I checked, which was a few days ago.
Dash fees are way less than 1 cent per transaction. Dash is very, very useful as a cryptocurrency, and now you can even use it to buy your gold and silver with, which I think is just a great thing to have. And Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies. It's widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get. It's easy to use Dash. You can start by learning more at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash Decentralized Autonomous Organization for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. You can visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. That is Dash.org. Let's go to Sheriff David Hathaway. He's on the line with us from, I believe, South Arizona, where you live and are the sheriff of Santa Cruz County. David, welcome.
Yeah, good evening, Ian. I want to talk about a couple things. I want to talk about how I live in a city of 1 million people in South America that had no traffic control devices, no stop signs, no red lights, green lights, no yield signs,
Wow. Nothing,
and it worked out very fine. Like, it was just very organic the way people organize. There will be a buildup on one side of the intersection, and then when there's a gap in traffic, that side just goes, and it just keeps going until the traffic is sparse, and then somebody noses in the other direction, and then that side dominates the intersection for however long, 30 seconds or a minute. And
amazing.
It's the biggest city in Bolivia. It's called Santa Cruz de la Sierra in Bolivia. It's not the capital city, but it's the biggest city in kind of the tropical area. But I also wanted to mention there was a caller a few nights ago that wanted to make my immigration book into an audio book, and he was wondering how to get a hold of me. And I give out my email address to everybody. It's real simple, just sheriffdavidhathaway@gmail.com. No weird spelling, no weird punctuation, just sheriffdavidhathaway@gmail.com if anybody ever wants to get a hold of me.
But thank you. Yeah, anyway, thank you for that. So let's go back to Bolivia for a moment. So when was this that you were living down there? And when you got to the city, you obviously come from the United States. Was this how big of a shock to the system was this change for you?
No, it was not a big change. Me and my wife lived in South America a total of 8 years during my time with DEA.
Mm-hmm.
And she grew up along the border here, too, along the Mexican border. So she speaks Spanish. We both went to school here and had our little part-time jobs at McDonald's and whatnot along the border. So we both had grown up in a Spanish-speaking environment. So she did just fine down there. It was of the kind of the embassy community. She's the only wife that stuck it out down there because it was very friendly people, very nice lifestyle, but a lot of the people, you know, they wanted more the U.S. lifestyle, the U.S. conveniences, but we enjoyed it, and it was real nice. The years we were in Bolivia was 1991 to 1996, and then we lived on a separate assignment 3 years in Paraguay.
So you were already in South America before going to Bolivia? You were elsewhere?
No, we went to Paraguay after that, and my wife and children came along on that assignment too. But yeah, we'd both grown up along the border, so we were familiar with the,
I guess my question, you know, was more specifically about the traffic though. Like, was that a shock to you to go from, you know, the United States where there's a ton of signage and a ton of safety measures in place to having, you know, virtually none of that, it sounds like. What was that like?
Yeah, it was. It was a shock, and I didn't know how it would work out. And I had a vehicle there. I had a Toyota Land Cruiser, and we drove, you know, every day on the city streets. And it was, you know, very dense population. A lot of these third world countries are like that, very dense population.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very self-organizing. And, of course, the people down there, the drivers down there, grew up in that environment. So it wasn't
they're
like they were
it.
Trying to... Yeah, they weren't trying to invent solutions, but it's very natural. Like, you flow up to an intersection, there's already traffic going perpendicular, you know, if it's a busy intersection, and you just kind of wait until there's a break in the traffic, and then your side starts going, and then they dominate the intersection until the traffic flow reduces, and it wasn't like, you know, collisions or confusion, and you actually are paying attention to what you're doing. It's not hard. It's not chaotic. And when
if anything, you've got to pay attention more, right? Like, you've got to be really looking out for what's going on. You can't just rely on some light.
You know, not really necessarily, because it is very natural how the traffic flow develops, and you're not distracted by a bunch of signs and lights and trying to figure out, what does this mean? Can I really turn now? Is the intersection really clear just because I got a green arrow? You're paying attention, but the flow is natural. It's not like people are trying to, you know, cut each other off.
No, I see what you're saying. If you're not at the front of the group, then you can kind of go with the flow. But if you're at the front, you got to pay attention, right? Because then you got to see, you know, who's coming and who's not. And by the way, it's not to say you shouldn't pay attention if there's traffic devices. Obviously, you should look before you go through an intersection, because there's always a chance that some psycho is going to be, you know, running through a red or whatever.
You're actually focused on what matters. You know, just like your example of the cliff and the guardrail.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of relying on some sign or on some, you know, supposed safety device, you're actually observing the environment, the weather, right, the shape of the road, what the road's made out of. Is it dirt? Is it asphalt? Is it sloping? The things that really matter, rather than taking counsel from some sign telling you what you should do.
Yeah, you know, it's actually interesting. We don't quite have that here in the United States, probably anywhere, but in New Hampshire, we don't have stop signs at our intersections.
Not
everywhere.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is, my street doesn't have a stop sign. And if you go over to West Keene, most of the streets over there don't have stop signs.
You mean if you're like coming off your street onto the main street you're turning onto?
Yeah. Okay. And people always know to stop, but it's obvious that you need to stop. But it's like you don't need a stop sign there. And in Keene, we don't have stop signs.
Yeah, I think, New England has a little bit of this, and the one time I went back down to Florida to see my parents like a decade ago, I was seeing they were putting in the roundabouts there as well. But we have these roundabouts here, which are a little taste of that, right, where people actually have to just go and make their own decisions about when to enter into the roundabout and when to leave it and all that.
You know, it's funny.
But that's about as far as it
goes. That's exactly this sort of situation where the signage, I think, helps. Because people don't know going into the rotaries or circles or whatever you want to call them, what to do when they're not from the north, especially when they're not from the Northeast. So,
well, I mean, that's the point I think, you know, David's making is, you know, down there they probably don't have roundabouts. It's just raw intersection, and you just got to figure it out.
Yeah.
And people figure it out. And I think that's what's – and when you watch the videos of this stuff, you can kind of see that, like, the flows you're talking about, almost how, you know, when you – in nature, you have, like, the birds that fly in a pattern, and this is sort of similar to that, but with human beings. These sort of native, natural patterns sort of emerge.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the clips that make it to YouTube where they show uncontrolled intersections in foreign countries, they're trying to take the most sensational clip they can find that looks like the most chaotic. They're not out on a scientific study to show, okay, what is the natural flow that develops? They're kind of sort of trying to find things that look out of control and uploading those because they think they'll get more views on those. Mm-hmm. But if they kind of just did a more sensible approach of, let's just go study some of these intersections in these countries that have had that forever, you know, since the whole lives of the people that live there and drive there, they would see like a very natural flow. But I've seen those YouTube videos that are trying almost to pick, you know, film a whole day and then pick the 10-minute portion that looks the most chaotic and upload that.
Well, thanks for sharing that story, David. Was there anything else you wanted to share tonight?
No, that's it. I'm enjoying the show. Thank you, guys.
All right, very good. Thanks for the call tonight. The number is 603-283-6160, saying he was in the largest city in Bolivia with 1 million people for years where there were no traffic signs, no traffic lights whatsoever, and everything was fine. I mean, obviously, accidents are going to happen, but he didn't say that accidents were happening more often. And that would be an interesting study to look at, to compare cities.
Yeah.
You know, look at this Bolivian city and then look at a city in the U.S. that has a similar population and maybe similar population density if you can find it. And then also, you know, what are the traffic fatalities like? I'd be curious about that. Since we're talking about safety and mandates, well, I don't know if you've been following this, Chris, but in the retail world, in big cities in the United States, we started to see a locking up of the product. And for instance, in Walgreens, you've seen maybe the videos where in San Francisco, people will just walk into CVS or Walgreens with a big knapsack or whatever and just start throwing items into it and then just walk out the front door, just stealing hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars worth of merchandise. And so in order to try to stay in business, they have started locking up the items. Have you seen any of this going on?
I mean, I have actually. Yeah, it's actually funny. I didn't even know like this was a thing. At one point in my life,
really?
Where like they would lock stuff up. I remember going into a department store once and trying on clothes and getting yelled at because I went into the changing room,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know that I was supposed to like check in with somebody,
right.
before I went in, because I guess people walk, they put their clothes on and they walk out.
Sure.
And I never encountered that before.
Where is this, in like a city or something?
I imagine it was. I know it wasn't where I lived, and I lived in a fairly rural town. It was a little larger than Keene at the time.
Yeah, they weren't having huge theft issues in the town.
Yeah, but yeah, it's very interesting to see. You go into certain cities and have these very, very high theft areas. Where they just have to lock up everything.
It's crazy. In fact, that's the story here about Walgreens in Chicago, where they're now locking so much up at the store, there are only two aisles of products now that customers are allowed to access on their own. The rest of the aisles are all locked down. Some shoppers, according to the U.S. Sun in Chicago, Illinois, aren't too sure about the new kiosk technology rolled out at the downtown Walgreens. Executives at the company made significant changes to prevent theft that have been on the rise in grocery stores around the United States since last year. However, earlier this year, during an earnings call with Walgreens investors, the company's chief financial officer noted that they may have been a bit dramatic. He says, maybe we cried too much last year? Maybe it's supposed to be tried too much? Anyway, it's too late for Windy City residents as a redesigned Walgreens with considerable anti-theft measures opened this week. Customers will now be unable to shop for themselves, save two small aisles of essentials. According to the source, the news outlet shared a photo of a digital kiosk where customers choose the items they would like to buy. Shoppers then pick up their products at a checkout counter after an employee retrieves the shopping haul.
This is kind of funny because this is going back to what the situation used to be back in the day. I don't know how far back you have to go, but it used to be when you would purchase goods,
mm-hmm.
there would be a clerk, and you'd go up to a counter, basically, and the clerk would then go and get the goods from the store and bring them to you.
I remember a store that did that. It was called Service Merchandise back in the 1980s and the 90s. They had one in it where I was growing up. And I think there were some items that were on the shelf, but the higher ticket items, you had to take a little tag up to the cashier. And then they would go ahead and they'd order it from the stock room, and some kid in the stock room would shove them out on a conveyor belt.
I think this is a little bit different than that situation, but I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like Toys R Us with video games and things like
that. They did that too.
And these staples, the high ticket items, electronic items would be locked up, from laptops to, back in the 90s, it would have been like DVD players and, maybe click discs. I'm sure nobody probably remembers those, but zip drives maybe.
Mm-hmm. But now they're talking about it's going to be your toothpaste. Now it's going to be the hair dye. It's going
to
be...
So it sounds more like what used to exist, way back in the day before department stores.
See, now this is before my time. I mean, did you ever see this?
I never encountered this. I'm just aware that, before, I think it was before department stores, before the big department stores.
Are we talking about like pre-Woolworths or something like that? Or like
I
around
believe
that?
So. Yeah, I think we're talking about like early 1900s before...
I suspect we're summoning Major Payne now, and he's gonna let us know where the way things used to be.
Who's 100 years old who's listening, because we need you to call in. You might remember some of this.
So, the weird thing about this is it's like, if you're going to make me order on a computer screen, why am I going to come into your store in the first place? What's the convenience?
I could probably answer that is, you're probably going to be able to pick it up within a couple of minutes.
It'll be a little
faster. A day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, depending on where you are and how quickly, deliveries might get to you.
It's going to be frustrating, though. I mean, you have to wait on an employee to go out, find the items that you want. Hopefully they get the right ones.
Yeah.
And then they bring them up to the front counter, and then you can check out. It's going to definitely increase the time it takes, especially if the place is busy. Now how many employees are they going to have in the store to go and pick for shoppers? So they're going to lose, I think, some number of customers, right? Because You're in a hurry, right? The reason you go to a convenience store, the reason you go to a Walgreens or a CVS is because it's 24 hours a day. You know the products that you need. You know you're going to pay more because it's convenient, but you're willing to, so you go in and you pay the extra price.
You may run. But, you know what's interesting about this is you may run into this, how do I say this, more in places that are high crime ridden,
mm-hmm.
and there may not be as much competition, so you may not have as much of a choice.
You may not have other options.
Yeah, there may not be other options.
Well, that's I guess the other option would be to just shop online, right? And I think this is going to drive a lot more. I don't know what percentage more, and obviously Walmart or Walgreens in this case is experimenting with this. They're going to see. They're going to find out how much sales are going to go down. Because I'm going to predict they're going to go down somewhat. Mm. But the question is, are the losses they were taking, which must have been heavy, you know, they were taking heavy losses. Is it going to be evened out in that they're not going to lose as much as far as shrink is concerned, as they call it in the business and
yeah.
retail, but they also may lose some legitimate sales from people who are just like, I'm not, wait, there's three people in line. It's going to take me a half hour. I'm not going to wait for this.
If I had to speculate, their losses probably ended up exceeding 3% because mm-hmm. I know that was
a certain acceptable.
Yeah,
amount.
That's I think the industry standard,
mm-hmm.
and it's usually once it hits 3%, that's when the stores start adding cameras or adding more security measures
right.
of this nature, and that's just. And I only know that because I used to work in a retail store, and
sure,
that's what I was told by management. So,
well, it would be interesting. I mean, they're not going to disclose the info, but it would be really interesting to know just how bad it got.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Were they at 10%? Were they at 12%? What was it that made them decide? All right, we just got to try something different. And so now they're bringing in kiosks. Walmart issued a statement about the changes to a customer who feared the store was closed for good. Quote, the redesigned store will have the latest in e-commerce offerings to increase customer service, mitigate theft, and increase safety for our customers and employees, said the retailer in an email. The pharmacy also has a kiosk system. Two employees monitor the essentials section where you can, quote, shop for yourself, unquote. The area includes two rows of shelves that are under 5 feet tall, so team members can observe what customers are doing at all times. But, of course, as we've seen in these cities, the thieves don't give a damn if they're being observed. I mean, in the videos that they put online, these people are so brazen. They're not, like, trying to conceal it. They're literally coming in with a huge bag and just grabbing stuff off the shelf and shoving it in the bag and running or walking out the front door like they own the place. And, of course, the store security is told they really can't do very much.
Mm.
They can't really, like, hurt these people for whatever reason. Or they're not willing to take on the liability of what might happen, potential lawsuits, etc. So they just let them walk out the door. And then, of course, in California, they've apparently stopped enforcing theft under, I think it's $900 or whatever. So it has to be, like, felony-level theft for the police to actually even do anything about it. So these people are able to just collect hundreds of dollars in product and walk out the door. So how is 5 foot shelves going to stop that from happening? How is having an employee watching these people stealing going to change anything? I don't know. I guess we're going to find out. Any other items aside from the two small aisles of essentials require customers to use a kiosk station to digitally select items and pick them up later on. Let us do the shopping, read a sign sitting next to the order station. Shoppers have no choice if they want to obtain anything from Walgreens, quote, full selection. The sign also urged Chicago customers to, quote, relax while we shop for you, and informed them they could pick up their items at the pickup/FedEx Western Union counter. Company spokesperson told the publication Thursday that Walgreens desires to improve the customer experience with the changes, and the Chicago location serves as a test run. They said the retailer is, quote, testing a new experience at the store with new concepts, technologies, and practices to enhance the experiences of our customers and team members.
It sounds like a very much a challenge if you're looking for something and you need the product information.
Yes, it does. Like you want to actually shop.
One of the one of the problems that I sometimes find is when I'm looking at, you know, products is that online is that they often, you don't really get the information on the box. Mm-hmm. So, like, you sometimes have to, like, hunt down, like, actual photos, like, on...
Looking elsewhere. Yeah,
right? Like, yeah. You might have to go on eBay to find a picture of, like, the actual box to find out if it's, you know, what you actually want or not. Because it's just, they don't actually provide everything on the product page.
And you and I, we're pretty connected, right? Like, we can do this. It's no problem. Oh, yeah. We can go find the eBay items, and we can find the large, you know, high-resolution images of the back of the box, and we're good. But what about the people that are not so experienced when it comes to online anything? I mean, believe it or not, even though we exist in this online world, there are still people out there that do not have an interest in doing online anything.
I can tell you that they exist because I deal with them every day. I have a business, and I can't tell you how many people call up my company. And I'm not the first person to answer the phone, but oftentimes people are asking questions, and they're so hard to deal with. I got to deal with them.
But these are people who have at least gone to your website at some point and ordered a product, and they have questions or whatever, right?
Somehow, not always.
really?
Sometimes we get callers, and we're actually kind of wondering, like, what's going on? Because how did they? Right? Like, how are they? Okay, their product information is right there, mm-hmm. like on the web page. Like, what? How are you? How do you not know the answer to your own question? Like, how did you find the phone number in order to call us? Because the phone number is funny. Because the phone number, we don't have the phone number, like. It's not prominent front and center at the top or anything like that. You actually have to open a product page, and it's on every single product page, but it's in the bottom lower right.
Sure.
So you have to actually already go through, like, specification, like, scroll down through specification information.
Could answer your question.
Right, which could answer your question in most cases. Yeah. So to give us a call. So it's like, how did you – and what I've found, I think, over the years is that often people have gotten, like, our phone number from other people who, like, are more tech savvy.
I see. Look, just call these guys.
Yeah, and they can help you. And, I mean, in some respect, that's exactly, you know, that's what we do. We help people who may not be as tech savvy. That's why we have a phone number. But it's just amazing that people, you know, call us up to place orders and, you know, do all the things. And especially because we sell computers. So it's... And we sell Linux computers. So, like, there's this perception that, you know, Linux users are technical, and it's not the case. But it's just really entertaining, I think, because there are really a lot of people out there who are not, you know, they're just not...
And there's some people who don't even use computers, is the point I'm trying to make. There's some people
who
they don't have a smartphone,
but
they don't have a laptop.
Even the people who do are not tech savvy.
Sure, that's true. The number here, if you want to join us, is 603-283-6160. I just feel bad for anybody that doesn't use computers, because now they're going to have to be going into these stores and having to have other people shop for them, and it's going to suck. More coming up.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to mysolarbackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's mysolarbackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at mysolarbackup.com.
Do you need to get your hands on some extra money right now? Maybe $25,000 or more? If you're a homeowner, now is a perfect time to get cash out while homes in many neighborhoods like yours have gone up in value. You can use the money for anything. It's yours. You can buy an investment property, pay off higher interest debt, or make home improvements. If you need $25,000, $50,000, or more, now is the time. Home values are up, and so is your equity. We offer you a way to use it. No need to use your savings. Call New American funding now and see how much cash out you can get. Call 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. 800-721-2477. That's 800-721-2477. NMLS 6606. www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org. This is not an offer or commitment to lend. Subject to borrower and property qualifications. Not all borrowers will qualify. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing opportunity.